This is the Mystery Stone Podcast. I am your MC, CJ, here with
Magic Mike. How you guys doing?
We're back to Magic Mike.
Magic Mike, here we go. I was going to say Sex Magic Mike, but you know, I'm not trying to get, you know what I mean? I mean, sort of. But it's relevant.
Magic Mike is appropriate for this particular episode.
Yeah, we're going to go with Magic Mike today. How you guys doing today? Good. Awesome. Me too. Thank you.
Today is kind of a special episode. We're really going to be touching on a topic of some of the most potent magic that exists.
And the most accessible, right?
I mean, to a point, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, for some people, it's not. Well, no. No, no, it's 100%.
To everybody, it is.
You're right. Yeah. It's 100%.
There's different facets of what's going on.
Yeah. So. some people kind of get a tough break when it comes to this particular topic.
Yeah.
And we're gonna go through a quick disclaimer ahead of time, people. When you're listening to this, when we get to the tutorial part of this and explain a couple of the rituals that you can do at home to perform this type of magic, we do have part of a ritual that, at least in Western culture, would be considered sort of taboo. More like you should probably put your tacos down while you're listening. Don't eat when we get to that part. We'll warn you again when we get there, but you know, kind of gross.
Like CJ was saying, this is gonna be an interesting episode even for us, because we're gonna be talking about the topics of sex, sexual energy, you know, as the title says, you know, things that even might make us feel uncomfortable, like talking one-on-one. But at the end of the day, it's very important to speak about these things because it's universal. It's an ancient idea and it's very applicable. And just a disclaimer, you know, we're gonna be speaking about a lot of sexual matters and it might make the listeners uncomfortable. But we guarantee you it's an important topic overall. So
it's
not a huge deal.
There's only really one aspect of a single ritual that it's going to be kind of a very weird concept for at least the Western mind.
Yeah, because in the West, you know, the idea of sex and all this stuff is kind of like taboo to even kind of speak about a lot, and or just like the idea in general is kind of kept private or personal for most people's lives just because of how we've been conditioned. That's about it for an intro involving that.
All right. So today's topic, we are going to be talking about, as stated before, sex magic and Tantra. And I kind of feel like maybe we should talk about Tantra first, because that is less magical practice and more spiritual.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah. Tantra, it's... So it turns out, it's interesting because Tantra in the Western culture, like a lot of people hold this idea that Tantra is exclusively and explicitly like sexual and that's it.
Yeah. For a lot of you people out there who are listening right now, Tantra and Tantrics is the same thing. You get that book Tantric Sex, which is it sells an amazing amount of copies here in the United States, especially in Western culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. But really, this is just a very small facet of the concept of Tantra, where there's an entire initiation process. They have their own secrets and everything like that, where you take oaths. Mike, can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I wasn't, you know, Tantra wasn't really an area of a life that I've explored exclusively or like in depth really ever up until leading up to this episode here. So there's a lot of concepts in here that even I was misled. You know, I kind of thought that Tantra was like typically sexual in nature, and you know, I'm just it's just a byproduct of me being a Westerner here in America.
I really did, up until we researched this episode. I really thought that Tantra in itself was basically an educational system for men to blow women's minds. if we're gonna put it that way, like I really thought that, like, and I've seen like some crazy stuff. I've seen the book Tantric Sex, and I've seen some of the things that are in there, and it was like, you need to be an acrobat to do these things. But like, but yeah, no, I 100% agree with you that, like, you know, over here in the West, it really was something like, wow,
you know. Yeah, and like usually most topics I have like a decent background of understanding as to what's going on, but like this one kind of took me a little bit. I mean, in terms of Tantra, Because like I was saying, like here in the West, we kind of take a lot of concepts in the world in general, and we kind of dilute them to like the Western idea or whatever sells over here, or just, you know, just it's like, because, you know, in the West, it's all like money making or just whatever sells, and hero, and just in general, sex typically sells. So I guess apparently they've kind of just taken the sexual aspect, like we're saying, and just kind of like no one knows about the entire history about Tantra in general. And even the history about Tantra is kind of shrouded a little bit, because the Tantra existed like about like 7,000 years ago, like 5,000 to 7,000 years ago is where it apparently like originated. And this was at a time where there's like no written language like whatsoever. So, and it was in India at the time. And so, you know, a lot of the stuff that we have today is kind of just like, rudiments or just branches or even just composite ideas of what this initial practice actually was. I mean, we have a lot of like understandings as to a lot of the aspects of it, but like in terms of what it originally was intended to be in its holistic manner, and just like in a comprehensive form, you know what I mean? That's kind of essentially lost to my knowledge. But yeah, interesting. So yeah, it started about like 5,000 to 7,000 years ago. And then Krishna, who is like a major spiritual figure, kind of brought it back like about 3,500 years ago, which like reignited the entire practices of this whole thing. And even the word Tantra, it means, it can mean like, there's like different meanings somewhat across, but like, I guess the major ones was Tantra, I believe it would be like a Sanskrit word for like technique or like a technology. It's just like a way, you know, to achieve something, you know. And there's others, ideas that came across that said like the first or like the prefix or whatever, like tan, T-A-N, could mean like expansion, and tra, the second part of Tantra, means like tool. So it's like a tool to expand your consciousness and to expand your awareness. So as we can already see, even what the actual like word actually means, and it's like root form, it has nothing to do with exclusively sex.
Well, sex is a pretty affluent part of it, like,
yeah, it's a small part of it, and but it all goes into just expanding your consciousness and finding your body and your mind and using the body as like a tool for enlightenment. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of something that we don't really utilize in Western culture, even a lot of religions. Like a lot of religions are kind of like mind based, spirit based. You know what I mean? They don't. It's not like such as like yoga. And yoga, you utilize your body and different bodily postures and breath in your body and functions of your body other than the mind to achieve altered states and to achieve some type of union with divinity. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the whole sexual aspect, which we'll get into, of Tantra is just one way of uniting yourself to the divine, whether it be by yourself or with a partner. And it's just using energy, you know, just like with everything else. It's just an aspect of Tantra that has blown up. And interestingly enough, there in the West, at least, there's this guy named Pierre Bernard. And this Pierre Bernard guy, he was around the 1900s in America. And he is kind of a massive figure in the Western world that made it exclusively sexual to our understanding and brought it over here as a concept. And he kind of incorporated his philosophy of Tantra involving sex. He kind of brought up these scriptures called the Kama Sutras. And the Kama Sutras, I think they're like an ancient, like a ancient, like Hindu or Indian text or something.
You can actually buy that in book form here as well.
Yeah, you can. And like a lot of people only take the sexual aspects of the Kama Sutras, but like in general, the Kama Sutras just deal with like the same type of concepts that Tantra deals with. It's just like expanding consciousness and like and love and intimacy and just like all these other areas. And it wasn't exclusively sex, but he kind of like extracted those parts from the Kama Sutras, made his own little school, and ended up kind of like abusing the whole system with his clients in a sense. So yeah, this guy Pierre Bernard was a huge reason why it became exclusively sexual in the West. But yeah, at the end of the day, like Tantra itself is just anything that allows us to expand our consciousness or to merge our individual consciousness with the divine consciousness, just like the higher overall mind of God or whatever you want to call that idea, you know, the highest form of being. Or energy, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot of the base foundation for Tantra The idea is to bring this divine energy from the base of your spine all the way up through the top. And they there's like a foundational practice where they do this breathing, and there's a lot of mantra work involved.
Sounds like Kundalini, the Kundalini energy.
Well, it's part of it. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Kundalini. Is that how you spell that word? Say that word, Kundalini?
Yeah, Kundalini. Yeah.
So the idea behind that was that there is a serpent coil at the bottom of your spine.
Yeah.
And you have to bring that up,
mm-hmm.
which is
the chakras.
Nonsense, because like you've never heard of like a serpent being wrapped around like so whatever. Anyway, but it pulls the same foundation. So there's the divine energy, and you pull that up through your spine. And they adopt, like, I don't know if Kundalini kind of pulled from Tantra. It kind of sounds like it probably did.
That's a good question.
I would have to speculate on that. Yeah, actually, if you guys actually know the answer to that question, hit us up at mystery.stone.podcast@gmail.com or the same setup on Instagram and let us know. I'm just going to speculate and say they probably pulled from it.
Yeah, or either that, or maybe it's just kind of like, I mean, I just saw like in various different religions, there's different names for the same thing, mm-hmm. and they think it's exclusive to that religion or spirituality, when you can kind of find the same concepts mm-hmm. just expressed in different forms, different artistic ways, and other different paths. Maybe it's something like that too. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the origins of Kundalini is actually something I really don't fully know.
Yeah, they do these intense meditation sessions that involve mantras, and a lot of people are familiar with that Om. Which is part of it. That's the thing. But it's actually not like the base. The base mantra is actually a word for swan, and you don't verbalize it as much as you hear it within your breath, as you breathe in and then you breathe out. And then there's this contraction of your stomach muscles involved with the exhale, and it's this meditative process. And then there's a lot of yoga involved. And things like that. It was like super interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So it just encapsulates so many different areas. The Rig Vedas, I believe, is where people have first come across the term for Tantra. Like it spoke about the technique or tool. And another word for what Tantra means is like to weave or to loom. So I guess in a sense that kind of means like just how to weave your energies with the universal energies and how to find that dance with what we call life, you know, just how to harmonize with existence in every way that we possibly can, you know, utilizing our senses, our body, our mind, our spirit, our internal world, how compares and harmonizes with the external world. And just the way of self-liberation through any type of way or practice of attaining that.
Yeah. But I mean, at the end of the day, the sexual practices within Tantra are insane.
They're very interesting.
They are wild.
Yeah.
Wild. And if you look at some of the diagrams, what?
Yeah, dude, it's like, man, I need to get in shape, like the real in shape to do some of this stuff, you know what I mean?
You need like apparatuses in like your room to do some of these things. Like I'm looking like the one image, the guy was like arms and legs and like a spread eagle, but they're not touching anything. And he's just dangling in there, inserted.
Interesting.
Yeah, like I don't remember what that was called.
Maybe he just was so woke that he knew how to levitate, and he was like levitating doing this stuff. Well,
I
right?
certainly hope so. Otherwise, that looks painful. But
yeah, that's wild.
But yeah, some of the stuff is absolutely, and like it's supposed to. The idea behind this is that you're building up a specifical. Wow.
Specifical, guys.
Specifical.
It's the keyword for the show.
Jeez. Every time we hear that, will the alarm go off?
Yeah.
No.
It's like from here on out, all keywords will be the ones we mess up on.
Jeez. Yeah, no. Like, but the specific idea is that you build up this sexual energy, which has a term for it, coined much later than Tantra was coming. We'll get to that more when we get to actual sex magic in itself. And it's the release of this energy that allows the separation of ego. For a brief moment, sex magic believes that's a moment of attainment for you, a moment of manifestation. Where in Tantra, it's this release. It's a very spiritual moment, and the idea behind these extravagant sexual positions is to build that energy.
Yeah, and that's a sexual aspect of Tantra. Briefly explained. It's like. Certain practices and like the sexual side of Tantra can just like say like you're just rolling solo, you know what I mean? You just want to have an experience with yourself, you know? Like say like masturbatory purposes. And it's just kind of like you getting in tune with your body and like your energy and like the aspects of your sexuality, because like a lot of people and like this is where it can get kind of uncomfortable for people speaking about this type of stuff. But, you know, it's just elaborating on the concept, you know, like say like a lot of people who are engaged in and who are like engaged in just masturbation, you know, they just kind of want to get, they just kind of want to get their sexual frustration out. They just want to like just release it, you know, and just let it go. And just like this act of animalistic, like an animalistic approach, you know, like they don't really do a lot of mindfulness on their body, the sensations in their body, you know, touching themselves and other areas other than their private areas, you know, like they don't really bring self-love into it. It's just kind of like an animalistic act of just like this lustful urgency, this impulse, you know, to extract, you know, that energy. But in Tantra, you know, it's all about feeling the flow within yourself, you know, like even like just running your fingers down your body or just like caressing yourself in a way that a lover would. It's like, it's kind of like loving yourself and like kind of being in touch with like the sexual energies within. It's not just about, you know, just getting it out.
Actually, there's a lot of practice within Tantra where, especially for the male, the orgasm is stimmied and the idea is that the man does not climax.
Yeah, like the edging process or just never even finishing to begin with.
Just never finishing. There's a couple of when it comes to sex magic and Tantra and stuff, there's a couple of different schools of thought where it comes to the longevity of the act and the significance.
Yeah.
But within Tantra itself, there is a practice where the male does not ejaculate. Mm-hmm. It's not always necessary for the male to orgasm. From what I understand, it's possible that the same principle applies to the female. But there was a lot of emphasis put on the fact that there are benefits to the male not doing this thing. And there were two methods that they utilized that I read that are practicable at home. So if you're aiming for that spiritual experience and you're looking to not climax, you're looking to build that energy, maybe you need that energy for your other works, whatever it is you're doing with it, or whatever reason. Like, there's a whole school to Tantra where there's initiation processes and oaths you take and there's secrets that you keep. One of the main things that they do is when the male is feeling that he's about ready to climax, he will withdraw from the female, and either the woman or the man, or homosexuality is permissible too within this system. It's not exclusive, it's all inclusive of everybody, but you know, your partner, I guess, would be a better word for that, will grab the penis directly behind the head and squeeze really hard.
Yeah, that's actually a way it's a way to stop you from coming, from finishing. I think you get your thumb, your forefinger, and you just like squeeze like really hard underneath the head, right?
Oh wait, from what I read, it was like you just ring the whole thing and just squeeze down like a clamp.
There's various ways.
They acknowledge, they're like, it's gonna be really unpleasant for the person getting squeezed. As a man, I can only imagine.
It can be,
but it's functional. But, you know, the other way is a little more awkward to kind of pull off, but it's way more effective. And how this works is you would withdraw from the insertion, and you will take 2 to 3 fingers, and I don't remember what this particular body part is called. So I'm going to use a slang term, but your gooch, which is the area between the testicles and anus.
Yeah.
There's that little skin area.
It's a little underbelly area.
Yeah. Yeah. Right behind the testicle on that skin area.
Yeah.
You take 2 to 3 fingers and you push hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not uncomfortable. It's not painful. But what it does is it causes this involuntary contraction of muscles, and it actually forces the semen to run backwards. And it will instantly stimulate an orgasm. So like if you're just practicing, whether it's for spiritual or you just want to satisfy your lady, gentlemen, there you go.
Yeah.
It's going to be weird. You're going to pull out and reach between your legs like that. It's an effective manner. And, you know, according to Donald Michael Craig, the average male, it takes about 2.5 minutes and that to reach ejaculation, and that's an average. So the idea is, you kind of want the act to last at least 10 minutes to reach that maximum energy capacity. Well, at least like where you would want the energy to be. So learning to stimmy the male orgasm is very, very important.
Yeah. Just even in practical use, it's, cause like a lot of people get in their heads, like, I mean, they're regular heads, you know, when they're in that process, and they kind of lose like the mindfulness of the body and just like the energies that are going on, and they end up losing that buildup process, and they kind of lose touch with their actual body in the whole energetic process of the sexual act. And it just kind of results in the superficial release, you know, on both parties. And it's also really important to have a partner that, if you're going to do this type of stuff, like with a significant other at least, that's important that you have a quality type of woman. Like even Pascal Beverly Randolph, who had made sex magic extremely popular in America in the 1900s as well, had spoken about, like, Pascal Beverly Randolph was someone we spoke about in a past episode, but he was extremely prominent in bringing the Rosicrucian school to America in the 1900s. And he was extremely prominent and influential occultist who influenced Aleister Crowley and the OTO and all these other groups, but we'll get to that later on. He wrote about in his book Sexual Magic, which is one of the first primary important books written on that topic in America, that it's important to have a quality woman. You know, it's not just some harlot, you know, not just some random one night stand girl, like someone who you're in tune with, like someone who is like who's in tune with their emotions, someone who's in tune with their spirit, someone who's a higher vibrational being, someone who you know, you're actually involving love in the process, some type of care. It's important to have a higher class type of significant other if you're performing tantric sex, because without that, you're kind of diluting, you know, the energies with impurities maybe, I don't know, there's just intentions that aren't 100% pure, or you won't be able to connect on such deeper levels as you would with someone that you're truly like in a relationship with, and you actually have like a really deep, profound, just loving relationship with. So the more pure, the more deep, and the more profound the love and connection is between the two individuals, and the more trusting and open that they are to each other, and the more potent that this practice will be. And even in tantric sex, like, they speak about, there's various ways you can go about this. Like, and tantra in general doesn't belong to one culture or one religion to begin with. It's influenced many, and there's many aspects that can be found in multiple religions and spiritualities. But it's not a universal thing that it's like this. It is what it is, and that's it, and everything else isn't that. And it's not like, you know, like we said, it's just a way of elevating the consciousness. And sex magic is just kind of like tantric magic in that there's ways that you can imprint your sexual energy with an intent with a partner, or you can like build up an intention with your partner by using the sexual energy, because when you have that sexual energy building up in your body, it's like releasing dopamine and all types of chemicals in the mind that allow the brain to be a little bit more plastic to certain concepts, like, say, like a mantra. If you're utilizing a mantra, if you're utilizing say like something that you guys are trying to attain or bring into the world, or a change within the psychology. It can be anything, like I am confident. Like, you know, I've talked about that before, or if you want to get a certain job, or like, it's like a magical way of imprinting a certain concept into your subconscious, utilizing the sexual energy, and its climax can happen when the actual orgasm happens. That's like the finish and like build up to the energy. And when you release the energy, you release that intention and that idea into the universe, and it also helps imprint it into your mind, which is the whole quote unquote magical aspect of tantra or sex magic. That's like an aspect of the magical side, at least.
Yeah, when it comes to that, the concept is the buildup of that energy, and then the climax expels that energy into the astral plane. At the same time, you have a brief moment of involuntary separation of the ego, which amplifies that, which is how, when they say that this is one of the most potent forms of magic, it's true. Now, don't get us wrong. Like, if you and your partner, or you yourself, or any of these, uncomfortable with the concept of sex magic, don't practice. Like, easy enough. Just don't do it if you don't want to. But Kind of before we get into the actual sex magic topic, I do want to talk briefly about Aleister Crowley real quick. Because there were some concepts introduced by Aleister Crowley into the topic of sex magic that I feel like people should be aware of because they are unethical, I think is a good word for that. Where Aleister Crowley, obviously at some point we're going to have an episode or series of episodes about this individual because he comes up a lot. But one of his things was that if you wanted to practice sex magic, you could practice with any partner you wanted to, and you didn't have to necessarily tell them that that's what you were doing. So basically you would be practicing a form of ritual magic with an individual and not telling them that that's what you were doing. And it sort of kind of goes against the concept of consent, you know, and a part of what makes Tantra and sex magic as potent is having a strong line of communication with your partner. And a lot of practitioners of sex magic will tell you that Aleister Crowley's views are sexually abusive because of that whole, you're doing something in a sexual manner with them that they may not be okay with. Because what if you told them that, hey, this is what I'm going to do with this is a ritual for me. And they go, yeah, no. You know, you could violate a person's religious beliefs by not telling them that's what you were doing. So I just kind of wanted to bring that up because I know a lot of people are like, well, Crowley had orgies and all this other crazy stuff. And there was a lot of teachings that were brought over from Crowley and the subject of sex magic, and not everything that Crowley did was okay.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like even Crowley's kind of like widely misunderstood too. Like, yeah, there's a lot of weird and bad aspects to him, but he was a straight genius above all. Like,
oh yeah. 100%.
Like he was a genius. Like there's a thing that's separating the works and the art of somebody from the actual person. And, if anyone who ever gets into Aleister Crowley, I mean, this is a whole other topic. He is a pure genius. He provided so much information on the mystical side. He was extremely brilliant in multiple languages, translated multiple scripts of mysticism and the occult, and transcended so many areas of the mind, and it was obvious. And he was well-versed in the Kabbalah and just so many different areas. He was essential in the world of the occult. I'm not saying he was a good person. You know, I'm not saying he was a bad person. You know, everyone has their light and bad. You just like to, you know, push boundaries, you know, but that's a whole other side of the coin. But yeah, and even coming back to the idea of sex between, because we kind of talk about the magical aspect of the tantric practice of sex or just sex magic in general, but like even the buildup of sex magic, like, and another focus of Tantra is uniting the divine masculine and the divine feminine within one's own psychology. It's like learning to balance the energies within oneself. So as to say, like, if you have like a purely masculine approach or you know, you can say like testosterone or like logical approach to life, you're kind of missing out on the creative or like the fertile view or like the creative aspect of existence. If you don't have like the left and right hemispheres of your brain aren't in harmony or aren't like balanced properly, you're kind of perceiving the world in an imbalanced manner. So it's kind of like if you bring those two polarities into harmony within your own essence and your own being, then you kind of perceive the world around you in the universe or even the mind of God and creation that much more differently and that much more holistically if they're in balance. So that's a huge focus of Tantra, is the uniting of those two things. And even in alchemy and other forms of magic or just in the whole metaphysical area. Mm-hmm. And just from personal observation of that, you know, I've always been a studier of philosophy and metaphysics, and I've also been an artist and a musician, and I've always done all these other things that balance both sides out. And when you get to see things not only logically but abstractly, and you start to see things not only like in solidity but also like in a creative fashion, in all areas of the universe and in life, you kind of start to see patterns, you start to view things a lot differently, and it really widens your perception as to what something actually can be or might be instead of just looking at something through one certain type of lens. So that's why it's so important in this ancient practice and so many practices to balance these things. And when it comes down to the sexual practice of Tantra, there's like I said, there's multiple ways to experience that sexual aspect. And one of them is, you know, first sitting down with your partner. You can even like light candles of a certain color, You can have incenses or fragrances going around that kind of alter the state of mind and put you more in tune with whatever energy you're trying to get in tune with. You know, just like any other ritual out there, just like any other magical ritual or ancient practice that utilizes the senses to enhance an outcome or to enhance the experience at hand. And starting that with the two, you know, you can have your setting, you can whatever helps to enhance the sexual flow and the connection with the other person. And then utilizing that aspect of Tantra that deals with the divine masculine, divine feminine, you kind of sit down like face to face, facing each other in the sacred space, and you start to connect with each other, you know, just maybe gaze in each other's eyes, and you kind of bow down to each other, and that you take on the role of the divine god. Like, you take on the aspects of the masculine god, like the god and the woman in front of you takes on the aspects of the divine feminine as a goddess, and you kind of respect each other as a god and a goddess, and maybe you start to come together, and maybe she'll sit on your lap, and you'll embrace each other, and there's a slow buildup. This deep buildup that kind of goes beyond, you know, thought, kind of goes beyond, you know, just like ordinary consciousness. And you kind of go into a trance-like state and into this bliss with your partner. That is if you're doing it with somebody else. You can do this with yourself, too. Keep that in mind as well. And this is why we were saying it's accessible to anybody at any time. You just have to learn how to get in tune with your energies, and you have to learn your own body and your rhythm and learn discipline and just learn how to get into that mode and to enhance the sexual the sexual energy and even ultimate release. But so yeah, it's just like slowly coming into harmony with your partner and acknowledging their higher aspects of their own gender and coming together as one. And through experiencing those two highest aspects of the masculine and feminine within your own self and your own partner, you know, slowly moving into the sexual act in a slow manner and using that slow buildup. So one could see even I feel like a lot of sex that goes on is just animalistic. It's lustful. You know, even a lot of relationships aren't even fully made out of love. There are a lot of superficial connections with not much depth. You can even think if you have this type of sex with somebody, and you're like really in tune with them, and it's a loving relationship that's really deep, and both partners know each other well. And they just know the mechanics of each other, and the dynamics are in harmony. If you utilize all these aspects of the senses and you come together in this way, and they have this slow buildup in this ceremonial fashion and this mutual understanding of each other, how much more potent, you know, how much more potent, powerful of a bonding experience, how much more potent of like a spiritual experience, and ultimately like the ultimate goals of Tantra, like raising your consciousness with a collective consciousness or the universal consciousness of God, or just expanding your consciousness and experiencing things beyond the mundane, like how that practice is a part of Tantra, the sexual aspect, and how powerful it really can be if it put into practice, especially when you kind of see everything in the universe as being sexual or gender related. And everything has its polarity, like, and everything in the universe has a polarity to it. Everything has a masculine or feminine aspect to it. And everything is made out of these two essential polarities. And it's just kind of embodied in human form. And so when we reenact a universal dance and we put it into harmony, it just becomes, we become that much more in harmony with the universe itself.
A lot of this is also taught within Kabbalah in itself,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
You have the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, and with half of its masculine, half of its feminine, and everything, like you said, has its polarity. When you get into some more spiritual practices, everything has its degrees. Not everything is just black and white. It's a degree of things, and there's a work called the Song of Songs, which was like a very erotic work at the time, but it was embraced by Kabbalah as an actual work of using sex for mysticism. And there's a lot of things that sex magic is actually used for in itself. There's like four main factors for that. Your extrasensory perception goes to the roof. It's super heightened during this state. Before and after your climax is when you achieve this state of hypersensitivity. At its peak, you are granted access to various unconscious realms, and sex magic is used to achieve timelessness and separation of the ego. Like we kind of touched on that before. And then one of the things that we also use sex magic for is for extremely potent divination and astral projection. A lot of people will do things with it like that. And then when it comes to sex magic in itself, like you said, Micah, you start out slowly and you build gradually.
Mm-hmm.
It's very ritualistic. We're going to have some tutorials at the end of this for things you can do with your partner. It doesn't matter. Depending on the path of sex magic that you follow, in the station of witchcraft, you can do it, like you said, by yourself. You can have a partner of the opposite sex, and then homosexuality is also you can utilize within sex magic in the sure. witchcraft sense.
It's all polarities, right?
Yeah. Right. However, there is a form of sex magic called outer alchemy, where homosexuality isn't compatible per a specific path. We'll kind of get into that a little bit too. You have your three subgroups, and this comes from Donald Michael Craig, who's the author of Modern Magic. His main concepts are thought control, inner alchemy, and outer alchemy, where inner alchemy is about the actual act of sex and the climax, and then the outer alchemy is the utilization of sexual fluids, which is that taboo part we were talking about before. We'll get into that. But it's this really interesting concept, because the whole concept of sex magic is derived from Tantra. So where you have a lot of those practices that are incorporated.
Yeah, and as you'll see, like, they're very similar. Like, it's just kind of essentially using it in a different way or utilizing it in a different setting. Or, you know, at the end of the day, like, they're all very similar. And the end goal is the same. That the practices are kind of the same. That there can be a desired outcome. There can be an expansion of consciousness. You know, it's all utilized for the same end goals. It's just utilized differently.
Mm-hmm. So within sex magic, the energy that is thought to be built was the term for it was coined by Dr. Wilhelm I think his name is Reich. Reich?
I think it's Reich.
Reich?
If I'm not wrong. I think I heard that name before. I think it's Reich.
Is that how you pronounce that word?
I think it is. I could be wrong.
I didn't want to pronounce it that way.
Yeah.
Okay. But he calls it orgon, is the type of energy. And the idea is that this energy is the optimal energy for mental health. And the idea between you build this energy and you release it, and it's supposed to do like amazing things for your mental state and your mental health overall. Tantra goes hand in hand with this because Tantra really focuses on the control of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Simon Ben Yochai. He wrote the Zohar.
Yeah, he was a rabbi. Yeah, he was a prominent rabbi in the Kabbalah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why we kind of brought the Kabbalah. Kabbalistic beliefs beforehand, because something that they preached about sex magic was really interesting, where they believed that the best day to practice sex magic was the holiest of day on the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They also believe that, say, you leave home as a man, you leave home to go study Kabbalah. Your very first responsibility when you get home is to make love to your wife.
Yes, and this is like,
part of Kabbalistic mysticism.
Yeah, and this is part of the Jewish mystical. Like you can see, there's even aspects of sexual magic, whatever title you want to give to it, because at the end it's kind of a label. But like the same type of practice, like he's saying, you can find in Jewish sects and all types of other religions, but it's just looked at differently. It doesn't look or sound so taboo, you know, as we're led to believe.
Yeah. In a witchcraft sense, they also believe that there is a separation between lovemaking and between the art of sex magic. Other people combine the two, but it really is that if you're able to separate, like, all right, the sex tonight is a magical practice.
Yeah.
It is different from lovemaking in a sense. I mean,
yeah, like, I'm sure, you know, like, it depends on your intention. Say, like, the whole lovemaking aspect, the intention is probably to bond, like, there would just be to bond and have, like, a more intimate setting. It doesn't have to be so deep and profound and a whole ritualistic setting, and you don't have to have an intention. You know, you're not trying to have some type of, like, lasting outcome, you know, like a cause and effect in the outer world. You know, it's just kind of like intimate setting. But sex magic, you are trying to create a change. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a difference there.
And the intention is super important, because at the moment of climax, that intention is immediately sent to the astral plane with a huge boost of energy.
Yeah, yeah, especially with sexual energy being like one of the most prominent and most powerful energies we have. Mm-hmm. But just coming quickly back to Tantra before, you know, just wrapping up the idea of Tantra.
Oh, I didn't realize we were still, I thought we were moving into magic. Sorry.
Oh, no, it's cool. Nah, it's, there's a couple of things I remember I kind of wanted to say involving Tantra. Just to sum it up, because I want to talk about just the commonalities, just because there's not one set structure in Tantra, because like we were saying, it comes from like an ambiguous history. Mm-hmm. So I just want to like kind of wrap up with the commonalities that are kind of, you know, utilized in just like the, in just like foundations involving it. And just quick, like the archetypes involving it. Like when I spoke before, the divine masculine in Tantra, is known as Shiva, which is, the divine feminine would be Shakti, and these are the two spiritual archetypes, the two divine archetypes that, you know, are supposed to be balanced or tapped into in Tantra. And also, in terms of the commonalities I was speaking about, they pretty much include, you know, over an overall worship of a certain deity, whatever deity that is, that's up to the individual. CJ had said before, mantras are very important in Tantra, whether it be a meditation, you know what I mean? Like, and these are things that you find across other various magical practices, spiritual practices, like this is where you start to see, as we spoke about in other episodes, just like how many parallels there are between so many different practices, like how one path isn't necessarily the only path of truth, how you can find very various ideas and truths scattered across all different types of paths, just utilized differently under different labels. So yeah, the uses of mantras and meditation, the uses of mantras in general, the use of uses of mantras during sex, you know, as a way to create the change or an imprint in the psychology. The creation of mandalas. The creation of mandalas are very important, just like in the Hindu culture as well. A very popular one was the Sri Yantra. I believe it was called the Sri Yantra. That's another, it's a really cool looking mandala that the Hindus use. It pretty much encapsulates the idea of the cosmic world, the cosmic, the universe, you know, creation as a whole, and also the human body itself and how they all correlate together. And you can meditate on these things. They're kind of like geometric. They're like geometric figures or forms that kind of, you know, the mind, it's kind of like a sigil in a sense, but they're just very geometric. But you can just view like a sigil and so many other practices of modern day magic. Like you can see how that's similar. And mandala, I think, as the term, is like a Sanskrit word for circle or something involving that line. So it's just something that's like symmetrical. Another thing is, you know, that's common is you take risky actions to stimulate certain growths. So it's not all about being comfortable. You know, like with certain risks comes growth. And there's a lot of risks involving spirituality in that, like you're venturing off of a certain path in terms of growth. And where there's a lot of growth, you can encounter a lot of pain, whether it being doing like shadow work of your subconscious or tackling your own personal demons and things along that line. So it's just about, you know, daring to take that step forward. Another one is embracing the body. Like we had said before, you know, Tantra is a system that's unique in that it utilizes the body and its aim to attain certain types of enlightenment or enhance consciousness, which isn't really found in a lot of modern day religions per se. Of course, it exists in a lot of spiritual practices such as yoga or Pilates and things along those lines. So that they're very important, utilizing the breath and the body and movements and things that get you in harmony with the components of yourself and how the universe works in general. And also building the balance of the masculine and feminine within, like we had spoken about before. Those are pretty much extremely important foundations that are found as like a foundation, like I was saying, for Tantra. And I think that's pretty much all I remember that I wanted to speak about involving that. So we were starting to move into sex magic. So we're going to continue along that lineage.
Yeah, I mean, that was I pretty much got through almost everything I wanted to talk about regarding sex magic. I mean, with its history, there are sexual positions.
Mm-hmm.
And these positions have different meanings and what their intention is for. I have a couple here written down that I got out of one of my books. I don't remember which one it was. But
mm-hmm.
For instance, the missionary position is utilized to bring positivity to the man's life.
Oh, I'm going to keep remembering that then, right?
Yeah. Now, the other position is woman superior or the woman on top. And that's the the vice versa. That's to bring positivity to the female or the woman. Male behind, colloquial. You guys would call that doggy style.
Yeah, I actually never knew that term for it.
Really? You never
the
heard
colloquial,
of that?
The colloquial version of that. Yeah. this is enlightening for me.
Yeah. The intention behind doing that is to send healing to a man's friend.
Okay.
Yeah, so like if one of your friends is down and out and you want to send the healing vibes their way,
doggy that's a way
style.
To do it, right?
Yeah. Now,
is this involved in a certain practice? Is there a certain aspect or spiritual path per se that these are coming from, or is it just like
high magic?
Okay, like theurgy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the reverse of that is reverse cowgirl, which I didn't know a proper term for, so we're going with the colloquial one.
Yeah.
And that's for bringing healing to a woman's friend. Now, I just thought that was kind of a little interesting.
Yeah.
Now, when you are practicing sex magic in itself, like I said, the climax is the important part. And there's a number of ways you can achieve that. Condoms are accept. God, please be responsible.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stress that enough.
Yeah.
Use contraceptives.
Don't abuse this stuff. You know
unless,
what I mean?
Unless,
just utilize
unless
it respectively.
Unless you really want to procreate.
Yeah.
Contraceptives.
Yeah.
Please. Don't. Yeah. No, I don't want any hate mail later in the box. Like, hey, you gave us these tutorials. Now I have 10 kids. Like,
it's like, listen, what we're doing is just purely educational. we're not advocating any of this stuff.
Yeah.
We're just purely speaking about it. And,
so
it is what it is.
You have basic sexual intercourse, penis to vagina. You can homosexual intercourse in a heterosexual fashion, anal intercourse is also acceptable. As long as orgasm is achieved, Matt, oh my God.
Another keyword, right?
That's coming out. Yeah, right? No, cause I'm thinking of this word here. Like Mike said before, masturbatory. There's a certain process with that, in the, high magic or ritual that I'm going to give instruction for then. There you go with that. And then there's oral sex, which is also acceptable. There's a tantra position called the crow. And then that in that position, that's where the male lifts the female and flips her upside down. And it's sort of like a vertical 69.
Man, yeah, hopefully she's light. That sounds impressive. That sounds real impressive.
I mean, it's
great and easy to do the other one, you know what I mean? But that's you're going against gravity here, right?
Let's be real about it. When it comes to oral, we'll go to lengths.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're going to do that for me? Yeah, all right.
It's like, okay, all right. I'm going to use all the energy I have. Let's do this.
But yeah, so within oral sex, it is important that the fluids are swallowed.
Perfect.
On both sides.
Perfect.
No, what's the term? Ejaculatory fluids.
Mm-hmm.
So female and male,
yeah.
Or male, or female. However you're doing this, it's important that those fluids are swallowed, which is very taboo in Western culture.
Yeah, maybe that kind of makes sense if you're looking at it like objectively and without conditioning, because you can kind of perceive those fluids as kind of like the physical manifestation of the spiritual essence or the spiritual polarities or the spiritual sexual energy that's happening that you can't see. It's kind of like the physical version of it. So I'm assuming if you ingest that or you partake in that, then you're kind of partaking in the essence, or you might get some of the effects at least psychologically. You know
and
what I mean?
If that
just
doesn't
more potent.
If that doesn't make you feel better about it, they're also loaded with nutrients. It's like having a super vitamin.
Yeah,
it's 100% true. They have crazy amounts of like vitamin C and whatnot in them.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, you know, like it's if you
protein.
Yeah.
Good for muscles.
I mean, there was a whole list in a Buckland's Complete Guide to Witchcraft of all the nutritional values to sexual fluid.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Who would have known?
Now, within sex magic, visualization is extremely important. There are some lines of thought where you need to last as absolutely long as possible, and then there are some lines of thought where long-lasting isn't necessarily important, but there is like a minimum of like, hey, like 5 to 10 minutes.
At least some sort of build-up, right?
Might want to get there.
Yeah, like don't rush it.
If you're gonna get in there and you're gonna be over and done with in 30 seconds, there are, you know, no shame. I'm not trying to shame you right now, but there are practices, like we kind of, that tantra practice we talked about before. There are other things you can do in order to gain a little more control over the ejaculatory process.
Yeah, one of those things is if I'm sure a lot of people have heard this, like Kegel exercises, they call them. And that's like where you kind of like hold, it's like if you're urinating and you like hold your urine, like you stop urinating for a second, like that contraction of that muscle that keeps it back. Is a contraction of your Kegel muscle, and that goes on to be able to control your ejaculation if it's strengthened, because it's like that muscle that holds it back. So if you contract that muscle throughout your day and do like maybe like three, like it kind of sounds funny in general, but it's an actual practice if you look it up. If you look it up online, like Kegel, K-E-G-E-L, I believe is how you spell it. Kegel exercises, they'll talk about it, and it's kind of like, it's kind of hard to like pinpoint where the actual muscle is unless you get some effort or you get some practice. But it's like if you just hold that muscle for about like 10 seconds and do it like 10 times, maybe like 3 times throughout the day, do like 3 sets of 10 throughout the day, that like holding of that muscle, like that's a good way to learn how to control or at least strengthen that muscle, so you won't just burst out so fast, you know what I mean?
Yeah, especially if you're trying to achieve something like astral projection from this, you need to build up the energy.
Yeah, and like with all magic or like all forms of thought or discipline, it takes practice, it takes work, it takes training, and it takes discipline, you know. So it's not something that everyone can just do perfectly right away or come into. It's an art, you know, it's an art form, and it's a form of coming to understand the self.
I'm ready to get into tutorial unless you have something else you'd like to add.
I just kind of want to bring to mind, I guess, the significance of sect magic or like certain areas, linking it to certain, schools that we've spoken about in the past that it might have been found in. Like I've already spoken about Pascal Beverly Randolph, who is the founder of the first Rosicrucian order in North America, how he brought sex magic to prominence and started speaking about it on an esoteric level in America. Like he was a huge proponent in that in general, which went on to influence the Golden Dawn and the Ordo Templi Orientis, which Aleister Crowley got involved with. And if these are like kind of like the Golden Dawn, OTO, if these mystery schools or these magic schools are kind of alien concepts to the listeners, I'm not gonna delve into them too much here, because we had a previous episode where we spoke about mystery schools and esoteric orders and such. If you guys are really interested in those things, you can find it in another episode that we've done.
It was like one of the first episodes we did. Very close.
Yeah, I think it was the fourth or fifth, maybe something around
really?
There.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's early on in the show.
Yeah, I think it was like esoteric and occult orders or something around. It was titled something like that. But that goes into depth on the details of the actual mystery school or magical orders that are out there. But anyways. Pascal Beverly Randolph really started this trend in the 19th century, and he had this group called the Mysteries of Eleusis, and he had that book like I've spoken about before called Sexual Magic that really brought into the limelight. And he spoke about, like I was saying, it's important to have like a pure woman that you have like a real deep relationship with, like I'd spoken about. And then later on in the 19th century, there is this person Ida Craddock, and she had books that were prominent, such as Heavenly Bridegrooms and Psychic Wedlock. And Aleister Crowley took a big liking to them and really was a huge proponent of sexual magic in general, like CJ had spoken about, in which Aleister Crowley eventually joined the Ordo Templi Orientis and became a huge proponent and high-ranking member in that group. And he really pushed, you know, the influence of sex magic in that group, which already had some sex magic influences in it. And in the Ordo Templi, in the Ordo Templi Orientis, or OTO, the deep sexual magic practices were taught in the higher degrees. So in the eighth degree, that's when they taught the masturbatory or the autosexual techniques. In the ninth degree, then that's when they taught the heterosexual magic techniques, just a general coupling between two people. Those techniques were taught. And in the 11th degree, I guess it must have been pretty interesting or pretty powerful, because in the 11th degree, that's where the anal techniques were taught. So, I personally don't know in too much in depth about what went on with those degrees or what they taught. Of course, I'm not part of the OTO, But it was a very prominent practice within that group. And Aleister Crowley viewed sexual energy overall as the supreme magical power. So he put real, real, real high prominence on that. And it was even spoken about in his book of Philema, which is a whole other topic, which was the book of the law that was transcribed to him by this entity called Iwas, which created his religion of Philema that's so prominent in occult circles today. But, you know, sex magic isn't the only aspect of it. It's just a powerful aspect of it if utilized. And that's pretty much just a little background on sex magic in modern times. And we could just see its lineage. It's kind of like any other branch or any other tree of the evolution of any concept in life. You know, it starts out as the trunk, is like the origin, is the roots, and then it has like a central concept and like an overall general concept of what the thing is, and then throughout time it kind of expands and branches off in all these other areas, such as modern day schools or cult schools or magic circles, and you kind of see how it's utilized differently but has the same tenets and stuff like that. So it's pretty much the same type of deal, just utilized differently, like we said. And that's pretty much what I have and wanted to speak about, and just in terms of modern sex magic.
Regarding Crowley too, he's the one that developed erotocomatose lucidity. And this is one of those things where some of his teachings fall into that unethical category, because they just fall into like, hey, like, you don't have to tell your partner what you're doing. This is one of those things that if you're going to do this, if you are with an individual, you need to have a very clear line of communication and approval with that person. Because in erotocomatose lucidity, the idea is that one individual, is serviced by many people of their sexual attraction. So if you're a man, it could be a series of women, or a man with a series of men, whatever you're going to do. But it involves a ton of people. And the idea is that this group of people use every sexually arousing thing they can do on an individual until their body is so completely exhausted that they're about to pass out. And then that same group of people will use more sexual arousal techniques to keep that person awake. And they're supposed to have these experiences as they're in between sleep and awakeness. And they keep up this ritual until the person passes out from exhaustion and is no, and you cannot rouse them at all. And then when they wake up, they're supposed to record what they remember, like in a journaling fashion.
That's interesting. That's different. So it's like an orgiastic approach to attaining some type of like higher knowledge or consciousness,
right?
Or results.
It's something that, well, it's rumored that one of Crowley's female students designed that one, but it's attributed to Crowley.
Yeah.
But he did teach, like, if you're gonna do it, you don't exactly have to tell your partner. Please, God, tell your partner if you're planning on doing something like that. You will lose that person in your life.
Yeah, it's just be responsible to all this stuff. You're going to utilize it. But like, one of the most like important aspects, like CJ said, is like visualization throughout the, like, say, even if you're just like masturbating by yourself or utilizing these concepts by yourself, you know, just instead of wasting that energy, you know, just building up like a mantra in your mind, something you're really focusing on, like while you're doing the act. Or if you're with a partner, or like having like the joint idea of a certain idea that you hold in your mind, and just you keep holding that in your mind the whole time, or you visualize something, or you use a mantra, and you just keep doing it over and over again with the sexual energy, with the altered state of mind, and at the very end, you know, just give that final release of the visualization or whatever it is idea you have, and that's essentially like one of the most basic, powerful. It's pretty basic when you think about it. It's just a way to influence the mind and cause an effect by using certain type of energy. Like it's no more taboo than that. And like all the other different aspects that people, you know, manipulate it, such as, you know, Crowley's version of doing that, or just kind of like branches of this. You know, it's at its core, like, with labels off of it and all aside, it's just a simple technique. Mm-hmm. Like, it really is. Like, mm-hmm. without all this other stuff that happened with it, like, it's real simple.
There are a number of couples out there that are completely okay with the concept of sleeping with another individual, as long as the concept of love and passion is not involved.
Yeah, I mean, it's used to own, right?
Yeah.
Like, who am I to say wrong?
Which, I mean, if you're practicing sex magic, these rituals, love and compassion isn't necessarily part of what you're doing.
No, it doesn't have to be, no.
Right. So
in Tantra, it's probably more important and has been spoken about. And a lot of schools, such as, you know, when Pascal Beverly Randolph spoke about this stuff, it was important to him that you have a high quality woman, like we said a couple times now. But and other schools of thought and other schools who are just trying to achieve effects or cause and effects and just trying to create change, love at its deepest core, or at least intimate love that we perceive it today, it doesn't necessarily have to come into it. So it really depends on your intention.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, we can really just start talking about how to do some of this.
Yep.
Little preparation ahead of time. In both systems, in high magic and witchcraft, it's encouraged that you take not only just a bath, but a very spiritual bath, both parties separately ahead of time.
So it's kind of like a cleansing ritual.
Yes. Yes. There's a whole lot of this involved.
Cleansing water ritual. Yep.
Within witchcraft, they encourage you to not have any sort of sexual interaction 24 hours ahead of time. And if anybody's interested, I'm getting this this basic ritual from Buckland's Complete Guide to Witchcraft. It's in there in detail. I'm kind of paraphrasing it, but it's in there for you. But 24 hours ahead of time, don't do anything. And then each couple will take a bath using like essential oils, perfumes, things that smell nice, like that. Maybe you're using scents that are going to assist in whatever intention you're planning on using. There are different scents you can do that with, lavender and whatnot for mental states and various things that essential oil wise you can utilize for this.
Yep.
So the idea within the witchcraft sense is there's a brief period of meditation ahead of time. And if you're not familiar with the process of meditation, we actually have an episode on that as well. And that episode could use some of your love. So go ahead and give that a listen.
Yeah, it's probably like a least listen to, but it is a really foundational concept. Like meditation contemplation, and grounding all of this stuff.
Isn't everything. Well, that nancha is like everything.
That's like pretty much the foundation of all magic to begin with, is just getting altered state of focus. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but anyways,
okay,
it is very essential.
After your brief period of meditation where you're focusing on the intent of what you want to achieve, the idea is that you kneel down on the floor or on the bed or wherever you are across from your partner. And that's where you begin to slowly arouse the individual in each other, caressing, looking, kissing, using all parts of your body, whatever, foreplay, things like that.
It's kind of like the Tantra intro, the certain like romanticism and stuff.
It is encouraged that you have a bottle of lubrication on hand, high quality, preferably, because sometimes it's necessary. And depending on, because what I'm about to say next, people can, you can get like abrasions and chafing and all kinds of various injuries if you're not well lubricated.
Yeah, that plus also like, you don't want to like ruin the train of thought or the mood. Like say like something happens like that, or like say like it's like dry, or like there's pain, or there's things happening. Like it's just important to have a remedy around, so like, you don't kind of ruin the flow of what's happening, right?
Right, because the idea is you need to maintain focus on your intent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now within this witchcraft system, they encourage you to do this as long as possible to build up all of that orgone energy. Right. So the idea is when you're ready to proceed, the male will sit cross-legged and the female will come into the lap, or, you know, I keep saying male and female, but whatever you're doing.
We'll just put like the polarities, because like seeing like heterosexual, just saying like in homosexual couples, there's always a polarity offshoot that like one's more masculine typically and one's more feminine. So just attribute the masculine and feminine as needed.
Whoever is doing the inserting sits cross-legged.
Yeah.
Whoever is receiving comes on top, and you come together as one with the insertion. You briefly sit like that for a period of time, embracing with one another, focusing on your intentions, and then you begin a rocking motion. You start out slowly and you progressively get faster. This is kind of where the lubrication becomes necessary, because not just men technically don't finish quickly. Sometimes women are, they're done in 10 minutes. It happens, And
some last forever.
Yeah.
It's like, damn, man.
if the ritual isn't over yet and she dries up or something like that, like, you don't want anybody to get injured is what we're trying to say here. So, apply that then. But when you're about to reach that moment of climax, focus as hard as you can on your intention. The person who's inserted will lay flat down on their back as they experience this climax. And ideally, both parties climax at the same time. Ideally. Obviously, it's not necessarily going to always work that way. But that's the idea. Now, the person who is sitting on top of that individual who has laid back and is now experiencing their climax, if you haven't done the same thing, the idea is you should also stimulate yourself at this point and try to climax as fast as possible to be as in sync as possible. When you do, you're to lay down on top of that individual and to lay still inserted for up to 15 minutes. And just experience that orgasm. And this moment is when you achieve that separation of ego. And whatever you've been, your intention you've been focusing on gets sent out to the astral plane to manifest into physical, what's the word I'm looking for? Physicality?
Yeah, or like materiality or just a material world, right?
Right.
Just manifestation.
Right.
Yeah.
Now that's a basic witchcraft ritual that you can do. And it's very simple. So it's going to take time. You're probably looking at about an hour of your life.
And it's interesting because like that in general is like a very, that's also an ancient thing too. Like that's a big technique in Tantra as well. That whole type of process too. So it's interesting how you can see, you know, just like how these things have been around for a while and just how many different types of walks have utilized it or incorporated it in a certain way. Mm-hmm. But it also shows like how powerful they really are.
Mm-hmm. Now, then we move into high magic rituals. And we encounter something, the first one we're going to talk about is inner alchemy. And that is, it's the same principle behind what we talked about in that very first ritual tutorial. This one's a little more extensive. This one comes from Donald Michael Craig's book, Modern Magic. And the idea is, once again, you will bathe ahead of time. Now, this one didn't put any stress on a time period without sexual inactivity ahead of time. So I would say follow what you think is best. You know, maybe you got off an hour ahead of time and now you're ready to do some magic. Maybe it's 24 hours, whatever was going to work for you here.
Yeah, this is probably where it's like important to be in tune with your own body and kind of know how like your releases affect your energy levels in your mind and just whatever mm-hmm. works for you. It's going to be different for everybody.
Now, they do stress in this one. Like in the witchcraft of Buckland's Guide, it really wasn't super stress, but here in Modern Magic, they do stress having an intimate connection with your partner, really knowing that individual, you know, having that spiritual connection with them. It's not that it's a necessary aspect of the ritual, but it will amplify it. And then Mike, you kind of touched on that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're going to take your bath, you're going to become clean, you're going to smell good. Maybe you're associating certain smells. You're going to get up. Maybe you'll light some incenses, maybe cast a circle. If that's something you believe you need to do.
Just kind of like rid the area of the sacred space right. of negative energy, right?
Yeah. And then they recommend performing a ritual called the open of the watchtower, is what it's called, right?
I've heard that in other practices. Yeah, the watchtower mm-hmm. ritual.
It's kind of an Enochian ritual, and it's utilized in Order of the Golden Dawn. But they recommend doing that. And then after you're finished, you'll close the watchtower. I didn't read how that ritual is performed. But, you know, you can look that up. I'm sure it's online. So the concept of the inner alchemy is you're utilizing the act of sex to manifest an intention. In this ritual, they recommend using sigils. So you sit down together with your partner and you create a sigil for a common intention. Then you take that sigil and you draw it largely on other pieces of paper and you post that all over the room, all sides of the room, because it's important that while you're completing the act of sex, that at all times, both parties are able to see the sigil and visualize that. Now, it's not always necessary in this for you to last as long as possible. They do recommend 5 to 10 minutes minimum, 30 minutes maximum. That's probably just for everybody's comfort, if we're going to be real honest about that, to avoid injury. They didn't say that in the book. That's just my own speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, depending on what you're trying to do, you pick your position. We kind of went through positions. There's many, many more than the ones that I talked about. But you pick your position depending on your intent. And you perform the act. At the moment of climax, you really, as hard as you can, focus on the sigil. Now, the sigil work is kind of important here because focusing on an intention is like focusing on a sentence. And everyone who's ever reached climax before knows that focusing on an entire sentence in that moment is something that's going to be very, very difficult to do. But explained in modern magic, they really talk about how your brain is pre-programmed to associate sentences and words with images, which is why the sigil works out very well for this scenario.
Yeah, and this is like we've spoken about like in previous episodes, how the subconscious mind acts on symbols and like is made up of archetypes and symbology and stuff like that. So this is where this isn't like an alternate approach to sex magic where that, as he's saying, like this, these sigils are all over the place. And as you arouse the sexual energy within, you attain these altered states of consciousness with these sigils all around you so that you have this subconscious programming around you. It's like a little program. It's like a little symbol. It's kind of like a logo that like you recognize it as a meaning, but it doesn't need to be put into words. So it's just like this powerful symbol all over the place while this act is happening to really empower and invigorate the change or imprint you're trying to make.
Yep. And then after climax, you close the watchtower. And it is recommended that you spend time with your partner afterwards as sort of like a come down.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's like the basic ritual. And you're going to spend some time on this one. This you should probably set aside, if I were to guess, probably about 2 hours.
Yeah, and it's probably important like not to go into it like rushing it or even maybe to have any expectations. Just kind of go into it. I'm assuming like the best way to be is just to go into it in like a flow state. You know, don't expect too much. Don't focus too much on attempting to get certain types of results. Just flow with the harmony of it. And just don't stress in between, because that kind of ruins the fluidity of the mind and that trance state.
Yeah, there were other aspects that, like, they recommend having an altar in the room. You pick your sacred space. So you mentioned that term earlier, your sacred space. It could be, like, a mat on the floor, a beanbag chair, your bed, things like that. And then that's where the act is performed. Now, the similar rituals can be performed with oral sex. And like we said, if you're going to do the oral sex version, it's important to swallow the sexual fluids. Not everyone's going to be okay with that. So really consider how you're going to perform this ritual beforehand and really have a strong line of communication with your partner so that everyone is expecting the same thing.
Yeah, because like the last thing that you want to do, I mean, and I'm sure it's fine. Like, I'm sure it'll be extremely effective without the swallowing aspect. I'm sure that enhances it a lot. But you know, if that's really something that's uncomfortable for somebody, then I'm sure you could just go about the whole process and just cut that out and just use the same effect whenever one has their orgasm or whatever.
100% correct, but that comes to outer alchemy when we get there.
Okay.
Solo. You are supposed to ejaculate into a jar or a vial that also contains an image of your sigil, and you're supposed to drink that.
Okay.
So
I'll keep that in mind for the future.
Yeah. That was the taboo part that I was talking about. Like, maybe you should put your tacos down.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's just a concept, right? I mean, it's inherently evil.
It's a concept, but like I read it, and
it's different.
It kind of grossed me out a little bit. I don't personally like the idea of swallowing sexual fluids.
Hey, maybe it's supposed to go into a thirsty.
Something. but then we get to the concept of the outer alchemy. And kind of like you said, you don't necessarily have to swallow the fluids. There's an entire aspect to outer alchemy where sexual fluids are put like females can do it onto like a plate or a tray. The male would do it into like a vial or a jar or something like that. And those sexual fluids are used later. Now, to my knowledge, that technically falls under something called blood magic. Blood magic doesn't always necessarily utilize blood. It can utilize sexual fluids as well. It is also an extremely potent form of magic and creates some extremely strong bonds that are incredibly hard to break.
Oh, yeah. It's a life force.
We'll do that in a future episode. Be very, very careful with outer alchemy. It can be wonderful, but it can be very, very dangerous. Really just like, concentrate down on that... your intentions, your sigil work, meditation is going to be important. And, when you go to do sex magic, maybe the first couple of times it doesn't work so well for you. These things do take practice. especially when it comes. Sorry, gentlemen, but this one's on you.
No pressure.
All of the pressure. You got to get it under control, guys. It is super important that the female gets off. She needs to reach climax just as much as you do.
Yeah, and the greatest thing about females is they can climax multiple times.
Yeah.
Us, we got one chance, and that's it.
Yeah, but think men are more like a microwave. Boop, you hit 1 minute, good to go. Your food is hot and ready. Women are more like an oven. You got to preheat them first.
Yeah, you do.
So, people, take care of your women when it comes to this. Their needs are going to be super important to this whole process, and especially if you guys have been together a long time and you know each other very well and you know about what it takes to get the other person there, you can set it up so you can do it at the same time. And if you can do it at the same time, it's going to make everything that much more potent.
Yeah, and it's also important to know that, you know, to deepen a connection with a woman, you know, women are typically emotional based. Like, they form their connections based off emotion. They kind of operate based off emotion. They attach based off of emotion. And they're very, in their brains, it all deals with the limbic system. So, you know, that's why a lot of relationships fail, is because you're not taking care of the psychological, emotional aspect of the female. You're not even connected with your own emotions and your own self enough to connect with them on that level. So it's a really important aspect to, you know, get in touch with your emotions, get in touch with your inner energies, with be in harmony with yourself and really understand yourself, so you can have that deeper connection with your significant other and really perform a lot of this mm-hmm. stuff if you want to, and have it, you know, manifest as powerful as possible. And at the end of the day, like, you know, like CJ said, like you might not get any effects like right away. Like, at the end of the day, these things are it's an art form. It's a coming into your own essence and coming into understanding and sensing and feeling a whole other area of life, such as the energies within yourself, the energies within somebody else. Like just focusing on utilizing all their states of consciousness. Like, it utilizes a lot of faculties of the mind that not a lot of people are ordinarily used to doing. So yeah, it's about practice, and it's about, you know, coming to higher awareness of what's mm-hmm. happening.
Yeah.
On top of everything else.
100%. While you don't necessarily need a connection to do this, having that spiritual and emotional connection with your partner is going to make it exponentially more potent.
Mm-hmm.
If you're really looking to manifest something in your life, whether it be mental stability, maybe you're trying to improve your own depression, or not necessarily you are depressed, just an example, or maybe you're trying to obtain money, or maybe you need some luck. I don't know, anything, mm-hmm. whatever you're trying to accomplish. This is a great way to do it. It's a great way to manifest that energy in your life, and having that emotional, spiritual connection with that person, I mean, it just makes sense.
Yeah. And even at the very least, it's, you know, cause like I was saying, like a lot of people just kind of do this mechanically, or even if they're like masturbating, it's like just a mechanical release. But like, it probably sounds weird for a guy in the Western world to hear all this stuff, you know, that we were speaking about, but at the very least, you know, like learning to caress yourself or like love yourself, you know, in that moment, even if it is just you, and just learning how to get in tune with your own sexual energy, at the very least, you can get more in tune with who you are at a very primal level and extreme and at your own, at the level of your polarity, and it can be utilized as a tool at the very least to understand your own self better and to be able to tap into your energies better and even how to utilize that in the exterior world. So at the end of the day, it can increase your consciousness in many, many, many areas, and doesn't necessarily have to have some type of magical cause and effect response in reality. It doesn't have like the end goal, like it doesn't matter if something doesn't manifest or not. It just matters that your consciousness expands, I feel, at the end of the day. So at the very least, it's going to do something.
Mm-hmm. And you know, from my own personal experience with giving some of this a little bit of a shot, didn't get full into it, but you know, started working on that practice. It really was a much better, you can feel that energetic connection
mm-hmm.
When the woman is not feeling like you're just kind of doing her so you can get off.
100%, yeah.
Mm-hmm. When she really feels like she's being taken care of, there's this moment where she opens up and you can really feel that spiritual energy flowing through her.
Yeah, there's
where she's made that connection with you.
Yeah, there's a point where they trust you to a point where that you can just feel like their emotional centers and their energetic centers open up to you, and you can and if you allow yourself to do so in return, you can feel that connections within the chakras or just within the polarity levels on a very primal energetic level, and you can feel that connection enough to have that. The both circuits work so that the energies are flowing in such a harmonious and fluid level that it really takes you to deeper and deeper states into this, regardless of any magical work, you know, just in general connection with somebody, you know, significant other. It's important to have those channels opened. So you actually have a connection. And at the end of the day, like, sex is supposed to be a bonding mechanism by nature. It's supposed to be a tool. And if you don't have all the channels open and the woman isn't trusting you fully with her emotions or just with your being or with your core, you're not going to be able to do the things that you want to do. You're not going to be able to connect on the levels you want to connect. And just in general, the sex in general isn't going to be as potent and isn't going to be as bonding. It's not going to be as it's not going to achieve by nature what it's supposed to achieve at its maximum extent. It's just another release. You know what I mean? Just another lustful encounter. You know, just some superficial act.
The other tip that I can give for this scenario is make sure that this is 100% a team effort. When it comes to this particular set of rituals, you really don't want a person who's in a leadership position because you don't want to have them asking questions halfway through, like, am I doing it right? Because you're going to distract from the intent that you're mm-hmm. supposed to be focusing on. So make sure you really discuss with your partner how everything is done. Maybe, as corny as it's about to sound, maybe do like a little rehearsal. Make sure that they're familiar so that they are one. It's not 50-50. It's 100-100. So they need to be 100% involved and know what they're doing because there's a flow to it and you really need those connections.
Yeah, and it does take a lot of comfortability with each other. Yeah, to achieve these states. I mean, it's not like you can like feel awkward or weird, you know, while these things are happening, and still maintain focus on both parties and have all those channels open to each other. There has to be a comfortability. There has to be a trust, and there has to be a really deep connection. Mm-hmm. Like we keep saying, for its maximum effect.
Understand in this moment that you will both be 100% vulnerable with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
When you open up these energies and these spiritual concepts to each other with this particular act, you are 100% vulnerable with that person. You cannot afford to have walls up. When you're channeling this energy, mm-hmm. you need to be just astrally with that person. Yep. I mean, that's pretty much all I've got.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So that pretty much sums up the whole concept. I think it was executed pretty well. I mean, as you can see, like, these things, when I explain in a certain way, and like, just regarding a lot of the taboo stuff, or like even alternate versions of the practices, or even some of the names, like, you know, attributing like the term magic to it, you know, it doesn't even have to be attributed with these labels and terms. Like, at the end of the day, they're just words. But if you actually look at these things objectively and see that the logic and the science and the sense behind it, and just even using your imagination to see how it could be powerful, it doesn't take a lot of thought to realize, like, yeah, you know, there is a lot of power in these techniques, and you're kind of like utilizing nature, and you're just kind of it's just using it as a tool, like using sexual energy, your universal energy, as a tool. And my approach, there's nothing really so taboo about that. Just at its core, I mean, what people do with that, the way they manipulate it and do some weird stuff with it. I don't know, if things are right or wrong, good or bad, this and that, but I think that's all about your intention. And if your intention, is to the highest degree of good that you feel is good, then, what could possibly go wrong, you know, except for either a lesson or a good outcome. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, with that closing, once more, guys, I really appreciate you coming and listening and granting us your time. And it means the world to me, like I've always said. And if there's any questions or any concerns, any corrections, or just anything you guys have to say, you can message us on Instagram at mystery.stone.podcast. If there's anything personal that you have to ask me, you can go to my personal page and message me there on Instagram. And the handle is the.omniscient.void. And we also have a Gmail in case you want to email us anything. These are just all avenues, ways for you to connect with us. Our Gmail is mystery.stone.podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, and we're on also on Twitter at Barrenlands too. Everything for that will be down in the description below as well. Yeah. But yeah, that's about it. Thank everybody for listening, and I guess we'll see you next time.
All right, thanks again, guys.
Blessed be.
Take care.